MacCast, Monday, November 23rd, 2020. This episode of the MacCast is sponsored by SanDisk. Visit sandisk.com/MacCast. Hey, Mac Geeks, it's time for your MacCast, the show for Mac Geeks by Mac Geeks. I'm Adam, and this is the show where we discuss all things Macintosh. How you doing? Welcome back to the MacCast, second time in 2 days. Glad to be back here with you so soon again. Hey, we're moving into the holiday here in the States. Thanksgiving is right around the corner, and I'm going to be a little bit busy, so wanted to give you another episode for this week. I know a lot of folks probably not traveling this time of year because of the whole global situation, but at least you have some additional content to listen to maybe while you're relaxing. Of course, if you're outside the States, hey, you just get another episode. So this is a little bit of a special one. Topic came up recently, or an opportunity for a topic came up recently with my friend Ara Derderian, who hasn't been on the podcast in a while. Those of you who've been listeners and been with us for a while probably remember Ara. He helps us out with HD home theater kind of stuff and home automation stuff. And this episode, we're going to dig into some more of the home automation, because with the new HomePod Mini coming out, and integrations with HomeKit, a lot more HomeKit products out and available. I've been sort of beefing up my home automation. Ara reached out to me and said, hey, I've been doing some new stuff specifically with HomeBridge. What do you think about getting together and talking about HomeBridge and what you can do with it and how you can set it up and how you can integrate it into your HomeKit setup? And I am a big fan of HomeBridge. We've mentioned it a few times on the MacCast, but I don't think we've ever kind of done a deep dive into it. So that's what we're going to do in this episode. We're going to get Ara on the line. We are going to talk all about HomeKit, HomeKit products, HomeBridge, how you can integrate home automation into your setup with your Macs and Apple products. And it was a lot of fun. So I really hope you enjoy this episode. I'd love to get your feedback and learn all about what you're doing with home automation, or just if you have questions about home automation and HomeKit and how to get into things. Hopefully the episode will answer a lot of those questions, but if you have additional ones, of course, you can always send your emails to maccast@gmail.com and we will help you out. So we're going to get into this episode, but before we get started, I do want to take a moment and real quickly and thank a show sponsor, and that sponsor is Sanebox. I, as you probably know, am a person who answers all of my emails, and I am a big fan of Inbox Zero, meaning that I do not want to have any emails at the end of the day in my inbox. And the only way I can absolutely do that is with Sanebox. I've been a Sanebox user forever, and it is the thing that helps keep my inbox clean, because we get inundated with email, just tons of it. And really, all we really want is the stuff that's truly important to us. And what Sanebox does is, as messages flow into your inbox, it does triage for you automatically. It sifts through only the important emails in your inbox and then redirects or directs all the other distracting stuff into other folders, a folder like the Sane Later folder, which you can then go through at another time at your leisure and get to that secondary, sort of less important email. So you know what messages you need to pay attention to right now, and you know what stuff that you can get to later on. And it has a bunch of customized folders that are really, really awesome. The Sane Black Hole, for example. All those emails, those email lists and newsletters and all that stuff that you get that you never want to see again, guess what? You take that when it comes in, you throw it in the Sane Black Hole, drag it in there, and you will never see those emails again. They just poof, they're gone. They go into that black hole and you never have to look at them, and eventually they just get removed and deleted, but they're not in your inbox. That's what it's all about. It's about cleaning up your inbox. You can also set up things like reminders. You can set up folders where, hey, this is a message. I don't want to deal with it right now. I need to get to it in a couple days, and you can customize the time frames. And I have one that's 3 days later. I take emails, I throw them in there, and then they just come back in 3 days, and I can readdress them later. But the point is that I have a clean inbox, and that truly does keep me sane. It is amazing. It's magical. And best of all, you don't need anything special. It works with any email account, any email client, your phone, your Mac, anywhere you check email, you can integrate Sanebox, and it will help you really keep focus on what's important in your inbox. It'll remove all those distractions and just make email a much better experience. And of course, the kicker is, the bonus is, you are going to get a deal. Organize your inbox and never waste time on email again with Sanebox. Sign up today and save $25 on any subscription. Visit sanebox.com/Maccast to get that special deal. That's sanebox.com/Maccast to save $25 on any Sanebox subscription today. And a big thank you to Sanebox for their support of the Maccast. So now let's get into a little bit of home automation, a little bit of HomeKit, a little bit of HomeBridge with my friend Ara Derderi. Hey Ara, how you doing?
I'm doing well. It's been a while. Great to be back on your podcast.
Yeah, it's been way too long. Way too long since I've had you on here. I guess we both got busy with other things.
Oh yeah, life gets in the way of all the fun stuff, doesn't it?
Yeah, especially this year.
Well, yeah, this year I've been able to catch up on a lot of things, but yeah, I agree with you.
All hanging out at home. But actually, that's kind of appropriate for, I think, what we want to talk about today, because it's a great time to kind of, since we're spending so much more time at home, kind of get into a lot more of this home automation stuff. And it's becoming, I think, a bigger thing for a lot of people. We've got a lot more options since the last time we talked. I think there's a lot more products, a lot more things that we can kind of integrate. So I think where I kind of wanted to start was maybe just getting a little update on, I think last time we talked, you were a little bit more into the home automation stuff than I was. But I've kind of gotten in a little bit deeper as well. So maybe a rundown of kind of the things that maybe we're doing with home automation currently, in just terms of like products and devices and, sure, and things like that. And I don't know, you want to go first or I can go first? Totally up to you.
Well, I'll just give you a very quick history of where I was. Yep. I started out first with Insteon. This was way
right
back.
We talked about this. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe about 10 years ago. And then Apple came up with this concept, HomeKit. And I was intrigued by it. And early on, I was running HomeKit and Insteon in parallel because HomeKit was new and there weren't that many devices. And the things that HomeKit could do was kind of limited at the time. But fast forward to now, HomeKit is full-fledged. There's still a few things I'd like to see done differently and more functionality added, but more or less, I have stopped using Insteon and I'm 100% HomeKit. And then a lot of your listeners may know we do the HDTV and Home Theater podcast, and we're at HT Guys, and that stood for Home Theater, but now we're thinking more home technology.
Right.
And so along with Apple, you know, Google has their thing, and Amazon with Alexa has their home automation thing. It's nice to be talking to the Maccast, where most people are interested in the HomeKit side of it. So, yeah, there's a lot of progress that's gone on.
Right. All right. And I kind of jumped in just with the HomeKit. So, like, I waited. You know, we had all those great conversations, and I was very intrigued at the time when I was talking to you about your Insteon stuff. But it was a little bit harder, I think, to integrate. It felt like there wasn't as many things that you could do. There were some great apps that we talked about, and anybody who wants to go, you know, go back in history can probably go back and find those episodes pretty easily on my website at maccast.com. But yeah, I was waiting for something to be a little bit more Apple-like, right? The idea that I could just buy a product, kind of take it out of the box and set it up really quickly and easily, and it would just integrate with everything, was really appealing to me. So, you know, I jumped in originally. Oh man, now I'm going to forget the name of the product. Maybe it was Insteon, because Insteon was one of the first people that I think to have a hub, right? If I'm remembering
yes,
right now.
Yes, they did have a hub that supported Apple HomeKit. As well as at one point they came out with a hub that supported HomeKit, which didn't work very well, and so that's kind of the reason why I got rid of all my Insteon devices.
That's what happened to me. I got their HomeKit hub and a couple of wall switches, and it worked okay, but it was pretty flaky most of the time, and so I got a little bit fed up with it, and I swapped those out. So the very first thing I started with was just a couple of living room like wall switches, like light switches, and they were the Insteon ones. And then I swapped those out for iDevices, and those things have been amazing. Absolutely love them. They're not cheap. That was the only downside. And that's where I think I've fallen with the HomeKit stuff, is I tend to gravitate towards the more expensive stuff, but again, because it just seems to work better. So in this case, I think sometimes you get what you pay for. So I had the iDevices, and then I've added some LifeX bulbs around the house, which is really nice. And I tend to also gravitate towards the stuff that doesn't require a separate hub, because I just kind of got fed up with having a lot of hubs around. I don't know how you feel about that.
Well, for the most part, I agree with you. And I also agree with the iDevices. I have one iDevices light switch that has worked fantastic. I think it's only kind of gone offline once or twice in the last 4 years that I've had it. And it has that little LED in there, which I use to signal when my garage door is open. I have a light switch in my family room. And when the garage door is open, I turn that LED red. And when the garage door is closed, I turn it green. So that is a really cool feature that is available with that type of device. But there are other switches that are lower in cost,
right,
and work pretty well. But there are some that were just terrible, and I ended up ripping them out of the house. And so it's unfortunately trial and error, or just pay a lot of attention to the reviews, because pretty much every device that I've had a problem with, when I went and read the reviews, there were people that were complaining about the same exact issues that I was having.
Yeah. Yeah. And something we'll have to get into is the whole third party app, HomeKit integration, maybe before we get to some of the, unsupported, how we get devices that aren't necessarily HomeKit set up, which is the meat of what we want to get into in this episode.
Well, one thing I will say, you did ask about hubs. I am a big fan of Hue Lights, mm-hmm. and their hub works quite well, and I've not had any issues. And the reason I like it is I can do some things with their, what they call recipes or routines, I guess, it's a little bit harder to do in HomeKit. So for automated type of responses, I will use the hub software, the Hue software. But for, asking Siri to turn the lights on and off, I just go straight to the Home app in that regard.
Right. So with the Hue system, then, with their automation stuff, does it still live in that app, or you just set it up in that app and then it integrates? Because HomeKit has its own automation sort of section,
right,
too, right?
So
it all integrates together.
I set it up in the app, mm-hmm. and then it transmits it to the hub, where the hub is what controls all the automation.
Got you. The Hue Hub in this case.
The Hue Hub. One of the things I like about the Hue Hub is I have some lights in my house at 8:45. I dim them. We're usually in the family room watching TV at that point, so I dim the lights. But the nice thing about the Hue Hub is I can do it over a period of like 10 minutes, and the lights just kind of, it's kind of cool transition.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas with the Home app, it just happens at 8:45.
Right.
They live together fine. Whichever one transitions last is what gets the effect. So if you have something that happens at 9 o'clock, that will take, supersede what happened at 8:45. So I just kind of know that when I'm setting up my routines.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've really tried to stay, just call it vanilla. Being a Minecraft guy, that's usually like the plain. I've tried to stick vanilla HomeKit for the most part. So occasionally, like the LifeX bulbs, I think I have to set them up in the app initially. But then everything for me is just the Home app and HomeKit as much as possible.
I'm about 90% there. The only problem with HomeKit and these third party products is you have to go to their app to do firmware upgrades.
Right.
So you still have to download their apps.
Yep. I have just a little folder, you know, it's like all my little home apps, you know, and then home sits at the top level. And if I need to drill in and do that, yeah, that's definitely something to be aware of. So the more sort of brands of products that you get, and even more categories of products that you get, right, you start to collect all of these third-party apps.
Yeah, I've got just probably as many as you do. It's kind of, and you know, for my show, I do purchase a lot of products just for review.
Right.
And if they make the cut, they stay in the house. If they don't make the cut, I usually will just package it up. And sometimes we do like a giveaway on the show where we'll just give those products away.
Yeah. So pretty much for me with the HomeKit devices, now that I'm thinking about it, I really only have the lights that are pure HomeKit. Do you have any other categories of products? You mentioned, I think, your light switches that are pure HomeKit. Like, have you gotten into the cameras or?
So I have cameras, yes, and I have also door or contact sensors that I use, and those are pure HomeKit.
Which ones do you use for those?
I use Eve. Now, a lot of people don't like Eve from Elgato.
Right.
It's because it's Bluetooth. But I have never had a Bluetooth, one of their Elgato products fail to fire. I have had commands sent to some other switches that just sometimes they don't work. But the Eves are rock solid. And now I do have good Bluetooth coverage. But I did want to do a thing with the door sensor. I saw that Ring had a mailbox sensor. And I said, I could kind of do that with just a contact sensor. So I went out to my mailbox. And I got everything all hooked up with the double-sided sticky tape with a contact sensor. And it worked great. And then that was because my phone was nearby and it had a good Bluetooth connection. As soon as I went into the house, it didn't work anymore because there wasn't a Bluetooth device. So that's kind of the only drawback Bluetooth device.
That's interesting. So does it use like a Bluetooth mesh like to hop from device to device or something like that? Or like how does it get?
I don't believe it's a mesh, although Eve does sell a Bluetooth extender, and the Bluetooth extender only works with other Eve devices. I was thinking of getting one of those. However, when I read the reviews on it, it said it didn't work very well, so I kind of backed off on it.
Extenders never seem to work very well. We tried to do that with our Wi-Fi back in the day, and it never really worked.
I just decided I don't need to know when the mailman's there at that second.
And one category that I'm really interested in getting into is video cameras. It just feels like though there's like a massive range of cameras and a massive range of price points. And I always feel like I want to be on the lower end. But again, like when you start to read the reviews, it feels like you kind of get what you pay for. But I am a little bit intrigued.
I've got news for you. So I bought the Eve. Elgato also had a camera, which was $150. Works well, but has terrible night vision. Then there was a company called Eufy. And I believe they're the same ones who make, what was that? They make cables and battery chargers.
Anker.
And that kind of stuff. Sorry?
Anker?
Yes. That's who it is. $50 and maybe even less. And they are rock solid. They work great, work with HomeKit. You can even use them for, you know, how HomeKit has the secure video.
Right.
You can use them for that. That is my ultimate recommendation for video cameras. There are other ones that work well too, but those are the best price, and I have not had an issue with them.
Cool. Yeah, I'm going to have to look into that. I have been eyeing those as well. We'll talk about another brand of video camera maybe when we get into the HomeBridge stuff, because there's a few that operate there, and I don't know if you've tried any of those out, but we'll save that for later.
Okay.
Any other just pure HomeKit sort of categories of products? Like, I haven't played around. You can get everything now, right? You can get, like, sprinkler systems and water flow sensors and energy sensors and like I mean, the whole nine yards, I think.
There is so much more now that's available. I'll, from time to time, go to the Apple site and look at what HomeKit devices. They've even got smoke detectors and carbon monoxide detectors. So there's a lot of good stuff out there. But after a while, you're just buying stuff for the sake of buying. I pretty much, I think, have everything I want. With the exception of what we're going to talk about in a little bit, which kind of gets me into the experimental areas.
Right. So before we get to that, one other question, because you mentioned with the podcast now, you're kind of extending into all of these products, including, the Alexa ones and the Google ones. I find it interesting that, you know, you're up on all this stuff, and I know you play around with a lot of it. But I also know you're an Apple guy, so maybe I'm going to answer my own question, but I'll give you a chance to answer anyway. Why lock in on HomeKit?
Well,
you know, what pushed you away from the other ones, or why don't you mess around with the Alexa and all the rest?
So with the Echo and the Alexa, we say a lady on the show because we trigger the devices, and probably on the Maccast, we don't have to worry about that nearly as much, but we would have people, tell us, oh, every time you guys talk about it. So we okay. actually say A lady.
Yep. Yeah. We use
Echoes,
those terms.
We say S lady for Apple, and we say G lady for Google. But I think with Google, you're okay, cause you have to say, hey, in front of it. And same thing with Siri, you have to say, hey, in front of it as well. But anyway, that's an aside. I thought it was the most complete. I think Google also has a very complete system for their home. With the Echo and A Lady, you need to use it. It's pretty much verbal, although they do have an app. It's very difficult from when I was using it, because I did try them all, to set up routines and stuff like that.
Right.
So I just thought that the HomeKit was a more complete ecosystem. Although there's room for improvement, and if you're interested, I'd be more than happy to tell you where I'd love to see some improvement.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, let's get to that at the end. I definitely would love to hear your thoughts and opinions on where things could be tweaked out. Yeah, you know, I had an Echo that was gifted to me. I guess I probably shouldn't say that word either. And an A lady system that was gifted to me, and two main reasons I didn't want to go that route, besides just being, you know, all in on the Apple ecosystem, so it made sense to stick with HomeKit. But one, that thing would trigger all the time. So I get what you're saying about not saying that word, which was super annoying, just accidental trigger all the time. And then, you know, for me, the privacy, you know, just the quality of the devices and the security on the devices is important. I think in terms of you have this stuff in your home, right? And a lot of the third party cheap stuff that integrates with A Lady, you know, they don't put a lot of thought into the security behind that stuff. And it's been proven over and over again in IoT circles. So I don't think I'm saying anything wrong. You hear it over and over again that they're just cheaply put together. They don't think about, you know, firmware, and these are embedded systems, so they don't get, you know, they don't necessarily get updates or upgrades or those sorts of things in a lot of cases. So if they have hardware security holes, they just have hardware security holes.
Yeah, you're 100% correct. And so there's a couple levels of what you talked about that I agree with. One, from a security point of view, encryption and whatnot, HomeKit is better, and it's more difficult for people to achieve HomeKit certification, which is why a lot of these companies didn't quite do it at the beginning. Although now the chips are so inexpensive, I'm surprised there's devices that are HomeKit, Echo, and Google all certified in one device, whereas before you have to buy a different product depending on your platform. Right. The other thing that you mentioned is the security, in the sense that now, this is just a little paranoia, I guess, but my wife hated the fact that the Echo was always listening to us, although so is Apple with the HomePod or whatever else you're using. The difference, though, is Apple wants to sell you either hardware or their software services or entertainment type of services. Amazon and Google, well, Google sells your information, not specifically you, Adam, or your listeners or me, but aggregation. Right. And there's always that in the background, do they know everything I'm doing? And the answer is yes. And with the Echo, there's always all of a sudden you're going to get ads for some of the stuff you're talking about. Now, I've not proven that. And a good example is, let's say you don't own a cat. Start talking about a cat and cat food and cat litter and see if all of a sudden they start showing up in your Amazon profile. I've never tried that, but I've always wanted to, although we got rid of our Echo, and so yeah. I can't do that. But maybe some of your listeners could. I've heard
that over and over again. You know, I'm willing to accept that that's probably just confirmation bias, right? Like, we just start thinking about these things, and then suddenly you see it. It's like when you buy a new car, and then suddenly everybody has the same car as you, right?
Yeah. Oh, no, that's so true. My daughter bought a car. Now, all of a sudden, we see it everywhere. So you're 100% right on that.
But, yeah, it does make you feel a little bit creepy. And, you know, the fact of the matter is, at the end of the day, though, they are, you know, gathering and using that information to target ads at you,
when you're
shopping on the site and when you're doing all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, and Apple does too. Like I said, the difference is they're trying to sell you their services and their hardware. And I don't know that they're trying to sell you other things that, like, you know, Amazon sells everything. So there's just something about it that we didn't like. So we just got rid of it and just stuck with the HomePod. But, you know, my wife's not even happy about that, to be honest with you.
Yeah. Yeah, we're going to talk about that new HomePod a little bit in this episode, too. But so kind of the next phase of this, right? So I started doing the lights. It was pure HomeKit. And then I'm assuming what happened for you is sort of like what happened for me, which was I had other products that I had purchased even before HomeKit came out. For example, a Nest thermostat. And I had purchased Nest Protect smoke alarms. And I thought, you know, it'd be really great if they would, you know, somehow update these or could somehow update these to be HomeKit compatible. But of course, it's Google and it was never going to happen. And I can't remember when I found out about it, but I was talking to somebody and they said, hey, have you ever heard of this thing called Homebridge? And I'm like, no, what's Homebridge? And they're like, it's like software you could get and you can install it on your Mac or a PC or wherever you want, including a Raspberry Pi. And then people just write their own connectors for different devices. And it basically bridges whatever that device communicates in over to HomeKit. And I was like, well, that's intriguing. I want to get into that. So that's where I found out about Homebridge. Do you have a similar kind of path?
Yeah. In fact, for me, it started out when I had Insteon. And somebody wrote a Homebridge plugin in the Insteon software to now take all your Insteon products and make them work with HomeKit. So I went and built that, and it worked fantastic. However, the problem I had with Insteon was they kept upgrading their software, and then they required you to pay to get the next version. And then it just was I had to keep chasing different versions to make it work. So I said, okay, so that's why I eventually gave up on Insteon. But at that point, I had no more use for Homebridge until later on, I bought a Ring doorbell. Mm-hmm. And Ring is not supported by HomeKit. And I read an article that said, well, you can make it work if you had Homebridge. And I said, okay, how do I make it work with Homebridge? I don't want to necessarily run it on my Mac Mini all the time. And like you, I found out about this Raspberry Pi. I bought one for $40. Then I downloaded the code, the binaries, or even the build files, and I built Homebridge. My daughter also has a computer science degree, so we just kind of did it as a father-daughter thing. We got it running, and it took us a while to get it working, and we did, and I was shocked. I had my Ring doorbell working in HomeKit.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. So, just to run people through sort of how it works at, you know, sort of the build your own level. And I think Raspberry Pi is, in my opinion, probably the way to build one of these things. Like I said, you can run it just on your Mac. You can run it on a PC. I think there's a ton of different ways you can actually end up running it. Because I think at the end of the day, correct me if I'm wrong, I think it's a web server and it just runs Python code, if I'm not mistaken.
You're probably right. I didn't even get to that level. I just downloaded the the GitHub, and I just built it and it was running.
Yeah, and it uses Node and it uses Node packages. So I guess maybe it's Node.js. I don't know. It's a combination of technologies, basically right. web technologies that are cobbled together, and people can write plugins for it for all kinds of different devices. And really, it's just a middleman. It's sort of translating from the language the one device speaks to the language that HomeKit speaks, and then the two can interact and you can run all of your devices. But it does kind of require that kind of low level setup. You know, you have to go down, you have to, you know, first set up the Raspberry Pi, get that on an SD card, get it booting into Raspbian or whatever, you know, operating system you're going to run there. Then you have to go to command line and you have to download and install the Homebridge stuff. And probably now I'm assuming you could buy a SD card or something that probably has everything sort of pre-configured on it. So it's gotten a little bit easier. Definitely the interface for Homebridge has gotten better.
For $20, you can buy an SD card that not only has it, it even has everything done, and they provide a web interface. It's called Hoobs. I'm probably jumping the gun a little bit, but it's called Homebridge on something or another, but it's all done for you. One of the problems I had with doing the Homebridge on the Pi was you had to SSH, and if you're not familiar with software development, that's a way to communicate with the Raspberry Pi from the Macintosh.
Yeah, from the terminal. So it's command line to command line. I mean, you're doing command line stuff. There's not a user. There was not a user interface.
Yeah, well, then I wanted to run a user interface, so I built a package on that. And then when you had to set it up to give you that user interface, then you could remote access into it. And now you're presented from your Macintosh a desktop, and you can right click, double click, and do everything you need to do. But it was just, if we had a power outage or for whatever reason the Raspberry Pi just needed to be reboot, you had to run all these commands again, because I was not.
Right.
It's not that I wasn't able to. I just didn't feel like trying to figure out how to make the thing boot into Homebridge and run all the commands. Because I tried and I updated the log file or the login files, and it just didn't work for me.
Oh, you never
and
got
I
that
got a
that
bit
part
frustrating.
Working.
So I just said, all right, yeah. Well, I got to find a better way to do this.
Yeah. So one of the things you have to do, you do have to go in there and run some commands to actually set up the Linux operating system to auto launch and auto boot the services, basically, for Homebridge. And you're right. And if you don't do that, when you have a power outage, you have to SSH back in, and you got to restart the Homebridge services and all that stuff, and it can be a giant pain. Before we get to the Hoob stuff, because I think that is the sort of next level of this, just on the Homebridge side of things. So for the longest time, you did everything from the command line, so you were just doing it from the terminal. More recently, they now have a package called Homebridge, I think Config UIX. So it basically sets up a little web page that you can then just visually manage all of your devices and things that are on Homebridge. So what happens is, once you have a Homebridge running, it's basically a hub, right? It shows up as a hub in HomeKit, and it's just an additional hub, and then you connect anything with these plugins. But again, even like the plugins, without the graphic user interface, in order to configure them, you'd have to edit like a JSON file, which is a JavaScript sort of data format in text. And even that could be a little bit daunting. So you're right. The sort of next level that came, and I only found out about this recently, and I think that's when I mentioned it to you, was I was talking to somebody about my Homebridge setup and saying, hey, it works really great. And just to kind of give a picture of what you can do with a Homebridge is, like I said, I had my Nest thermostat. I had my Nest Protect smoke detectors, and those would not show up in HomeKit. Installed some plugins for those, and now I can control my Nest thermostat just like any other device through, any of their HomeKit-compatible thermostat. Another advantage for me was that I wanted to get a MyQ garage door opener, which is a product from, I think Chamberlain makes it. And they have a hub, a MyQ hub, and it's like $40. But that has to work. Then that can work with any garage door opener. It's kind of universal. But when I went to look to see if it had HomeKit compatibility, it said, well, yeah, we have HomeKit compatibility. If you buy our MyQ, and this is interesting because the product is named Homebridge, a MyQ Homebridge. And I don't know if it actually just is a Homebridge, but it's like another $70 product. So like Amazon was having a sale on the little hub that would work and works with Alexa and all these other things. But if I wanted HomeKit compatibility, it was going to be like another $70 on top of the $40. So, you know, I'm in at $120. And then I found out, well, this will work with Homebridge too. So I was able to, on a Amazon special, I think I got the MyQ garage door hub for $20 or $25. And then I just added it to my Homebridge. And now I can control my garage door from that. So it's pretty amazing, all of the things that are written for Homebridge. But yeah, you kind of have to be a little bit of a tech nerd to know how to set it up and kind of get it really, really working nicely. So in comes Hoobs, right?
Yeah, but before we get to Hoobs, I'm amazed at what people do, and they don't charge you for it. All these things, you can do it other than buying the Raspberry Pi. It's all free of charge. It's amazing. So, so then Hoobs, and you can buy that online, and I think you could buy the device itself for like $150, and that is your pre-configured Raspberry Pi. It has all the software on there. You pretty much plug it in, and it boots up, and you can start adding your plugins. You don't have to do really much at all to do it.
Yeah, it has a graphic user interface that you log into. Does it still with a web browser?
Yes, it's a web browser.
Yeah,
and I've configured
really
mine.
Nice.
I've configured mine, so I didn't have to do anything to it, but it was on my router. I just exposed the Hoobs device, the Raspberry Pi, so that I can get at it from outside, and then if I was ever to have an issue, I can log into it and then mess with it from away from home. But if you just get an SD card and you've got a Raspberry Pi, I think it's $20. You just plug it in, and it's essentially the same exact thing.
So bring your own Raspberry Pi, or if you just want the out of the box plug and play experience, it's about $170, I think.
Yeah, here, let me look that up.
So, and a Raspberry Pi is going to run you anywhere from probably $15 to $40, and then another $20 for the SD card. So if you want to build it yourself, it sounds like you can get in probably around $60-$70. If you want, just out of the box at Hoobs.org, Hoobs.org, it's $170. I don't even know if they sell these things on Amazon, or I haven't gone to see where they are, but
yeah, it's $170. I don't know if you can get it at Amazon or not, but
and it stands for Homebridge Out of the Box System.
That's what it is. Yeah. And they also have some Hoobs, what they call certified plugins. Mm-hmm. And the Ring is one of those, and the Harmony Hub is one of those. And what that means is that it installs very easily. You can use non-certified plugins, but when you have to configure, there's a configuration involved with all the plugins that where you're kind of talking about defining your device.
Yeah, you got to edit text JSON files that can be really cryptic. And if you get the syntax wrong, just like any other program language, the thing won't work, and you'll be troubleshooting all day long.
Right, and if the device is certified, you don't have to edit any of the files. They have drop-down menus, and you just type what you need in there, and then it generates the JSON file for you. So I've got only two plugins because I unfortunately had already bought my the garage door opener. I spent that $70 and bought the extra device before I had this. But the ones I have is for my Harmony remote, so I can ask Siri just to turn on the TV. I can ask it to mute the TV and increase the volume, and you can set all those things up in the plugin. And also I have one for the Ring. And the nice thing about the Ring doorbell, you know how if you've got the latest version of HomeKit and the Apple TV, if somebody comes to your door, it puts up a little window in the upper right hand or whatever, in one of the corners on your screen of who's at the door. And it does that with this Ring doorbell, even though it's a HomeBridge device.
That is really cool.
Yeah, my kids were a little bit, they didn't like it when the first time somebody was at the door and all of a sudden they can see who it is. They go, I don't like that. I go, I think it's totally cool. So,
yeah, yeah. And so, yeah, this is, I mean, we're in the future, man. Like, this is like, you know, you don't have to suddenly worry as much about, you know, does it have HomeKit compatibility or not. Now, I'm not going to say, and I don't know how your experience has been. It's been really good with HomeBridge for me. It definitely isn't HomeKit good all the time. My HomeBridge devices do seem to act up and be a little bit more flaky, a little bit less reliable than my native HomeKit products, but I would say not by much.
Yeah, I have experienced actually no issues with the HomeBridge stuff, and in some cases they actually work better.
Oh wow.
Than, yeah, well, remember, I've only got the Harmony remote and the Ring doorbell. The Ring doorbell works phenomenally well. And the cameras, I also have some Ring cameras too, by the way, which also works in there. So I have only one camera in the backyard, and I have the Ring doorbell. And the only reason I didn't buy more Ring cameras is because of that Eufy camera was so cheap. You know what I did? You're going to laugh. I wrapped it in Saran wrap really mm-hmm. tight, and I have it outside underneath one of my eaves, and it's been out there for about 5-6 months with no issues, and it's rained and everything. So
you know, they make outdoor ones, I think, right?
Yeah, the problem there is they go to like a central hub, and the hub is where kind of the smarts are, and it's battery operated. So I ended up having power plugs put under my eaves for Christmas lights, and so this way I have a permanent power supply at the camera. And $50, I figured if it runs for a year, I could just put a new one, you know, up a year later if it stops working.
Yeah. So getting back to that thing I was alluding to earlier about the cameras, right? Because I'm very interested in setting up some cameras and doing some things with cameras that I just haven't dove in yet because of really of the cost. The Eufy ones sound very intriguing to me. Like I said, I've been looking at them. $50 is not too bad. So I may go that route. But prior to this, something I was really considering just because it's so dang cheap is, do you know about these Wyze cameras, W-Y-Z-E?
Yes, I have. And I was going to get those as well.
$20.
To play around with. Yeah.
And they have a HomeBridge plug-in.
FYI, the Eufy camera is only $40 now. That's only $10 less.
They're coming still, way down.
Yeah. So, yeah, I was thinking about getting the Wyze. Oh, the other thing about the Eufy, they have an indoor camera that is pan and tilt. And I have that in my garage. We have a summer place that we go to, and I have this thing in the garage so I can just kind of do a sweep around the garage and see if there's anything going on in there. And that's right now on Amazon, it's $40 off. It's $40. It's normally $50. It's $40, $10 off. So that's the other thing. I don't know if the Wyze has a pan and tilt camera.
No, I don't. I'm not at $20. I don't know if they have other options. But yeah, these things are so cheap. It's just like, feel like,
but you know,
you almost
I
feel like just nerding
one.
Out and playing with it, you know, for $20.
That's what
it's worth just
I
like
totally
messing
agree with.
With
you. At $25, I might just have to get one just because it's $25.
See what you can do with it. Hey, MechGeeks, it's Adam. Just jumping in here real quick. Hope you're enjoying my conversation with R. Derderian about HomeKit and HomeBridge. We're going to get back to that in just a second, talk about all the cool products and integrations and things that we're doing with our HomeKit setups. But I did want to take a quick moment to thank another show sponsor and talk to you about another really cool product that I've been using recently. So I want to talk to you about SanDisk here for a moment, because a thing that I talk about a lot on the MacCast is backup and the importance of backup. And we also talk a lot about storage on our iDevices and very often how we manage that storage. And SanDisk has this really cool product that I've been using called the iExpand Flash Drive. And we all know how easy it is to run out of space on your phone, on your iPad, and it is a terrible feeling when you have to go through and start deleting stuff. And a big area that fills up for a lot of us, of course, is our photos. Photos and videos take up a lot of storage space, and that's why I am excited about this product, this solution from SanDisk. We all know that we have thumb drives for our computers. They're super easy. They're super convenient. This solution from SanDisk has you covered on your phone as well. Your iPhone, your iPad does support using external storage devices like thumb drives, like the iExpand Flash Drive. I've been using this iExpand Flash Drive, and what makes it unique is it's a two-in-one drive. It's designed for your iPhone and your iPad. It comes in two variations depending upon what kind of connectivity you need. So there is one that has a Lightning port on one side and then a USB-A port on the other side, or you can get the one that has a USB-C port on one side and a USB-A port on the other side. So as you imagine, what this allows you to do is quickly plug it into your iPhone or your iPad, and then you can back up your stuff, specifically your photos. It's great for photos. The app has a built-in way to actually auto backup all of the photos that are on your phone. So you can simply plug it in and automatically the iExpand app will back up everything. I've been using that feature. But the feature that I really love is using the USB-C one with my iPad Pro, because I can plug that in. It shows up as a device in the Files app and I can use it to back up all my files and important documents that are on my iPad. It also makes it super convenient when I need to move files to my Mac, to one of the other Macs in my household. I need to share it with members of my family. These things are awesome. And added bonus, they're just fun to play with. It's almost like a little fidget spinner. I'm absolutely loving these things. They are amazing. They have options available for storage sizes ranging from 128 to 256 gigabytes, so plenty of storage to back up all your stuff. Hey, we're going into the holidays. We're all going to be taking a lot of photos. This is a great way to make sure that those are backed up, but also that you have space on your iPhone to continue to capture those memories. So take my advice. Start freeing space up on your phone with SanDisk today, and right now you can get 15% off your first order of featured SanDisk products, but only when you go to sandisk.com/Maccast. So don't wait. That's sandisk.com, sandisk.com/Maccast to get 15% off your first order of featured SanDisk products. Pick up a couple of these SanDisk iExpand drives. You're going to love them. I absolutely love them. And a big thank you to SanDisk for their support of the Maccast. Now let's get back to our conversation with Ara Dirdirian talking about HomeKit and Homebridge. So what's cool, again, I think what really was sort of game-changing for me about adding in the Homebridge and getting more products, and you've alluded to this a little bit already, is like, it's really cool to have the home automation, right? To be able to tell Siri, you know, turn on the lights or take a specific action. But where it really starts to feel like the Jetsons future is when you can start scripting and combining these things together and creating, you know, sort of, I was going to call them workflows, but they're more like life flows, right? Like, do certain actions when certain things happen. And I haven't delved too much into this other than something that Homebridge enabled with my Nest Protect smoke detectors is they have a motion sensor in them. And so that motion sensor is then made available through the Homebridge. So I can do things now, like I have one that sits in my hallway right outside my bedroom. And so from midnight until 6 a.m., I just have a little detector on there. If it detects motion, it dims the lights up just about 10% so that you can see, walk around, and then 15 minutes later, it just turns them back off again. So I can get up, get a snack, get a glass of water, whatever it be. It'll be nice and lit. Go back to bed, and I'll know that the lights just go out. Like, that's really cool. Like, I don't have to touch light switch. I don't have to fumble around in the dark, even though I now have the, I have the little night light, like you said, on my light switch, because it's the iDevices. But, you know, that's the stuff that ends up being really, really cool. So sounds like you're doing a lot more with automation and sort of linking
and
things
that's
together.
Really where this stuff shines. So you've got, you said there's motion detection type stuff. There's time of day type of stuff too. So like, for instance, at 5 p.m. Every day, I have my outdoor Hue lights right now go into Christmas mode. And so they have different colors. Otherwise, they're just normally just plain white.
Right.
At 9:30, I have a light that's in my bedroom just turn off. So you have the time-based things. And another thing that's nice about it is you can even say, if nobody's at home, don't do this. If you can also do it if, like, specifically I'm at home or my wife's at home. You can have different things that happen as a result of who's in the house or who's not in the house, which is really cool. In fact, when my garage door opens, I have all the lights in the garage turn on if it's dark. That's the other thing you can do. Say if it's dark and the garage door opens, turn on the lights. And so you get that extra amount of light. Then there's motion sensors, as you mentioned. And all the cameras have motion sensors too. And you don't you can trigger based on something walking past a camera. I have one where if somebody walks past my camera in the front and it's the lights are out, they all turn on. So there's a lot of really cool things you can do. You can do them based on sunrise, sunset. You can even say, you know, sunset and randomize the time so that it doesn't look like it's happening at this time every single day. When my garage door opens and closes, let's see, what else do I have here? When I arrive at home, there's certain things that can happen. So there's a lot of really cool things that you can do with, your automation, and, it just gets to be like crack. You just want to keep doing more things.
Yeah. Yeah. In this, and just like, even like simple things like scenes, you know, I'm sure you likely have one for, like we do, for watching a movie, you know, which dims the lights down and kind of sets the mood for everything. And it gets even cooler when you have a device like a HomePod or that sort of thing, because you could just really, you know, it's, again, it's like the bridge on the Star Trek. You just have this thing that you talk out into the ether and things happen in your house.
Well, and the other nice thing is you can set up scenes, name them something, and then trigger events. So I have one scene called Security, and what that does is it turns on a bunch of lights. And security happens if there's motion inside the house and none of us are home. So it'll, if you were to walk into my house and we weren't there at night, all the lights would come on. And one of the things that people want to burglarize you, they want, they don't want it to be very bright. I always told my neighbors, if we're not home and every light in my house is on, something's going on, call the police. So that's my security system.
Right.
And I've told all my neighbors who surround my house this information. So I figure if one of them catches it, we're good. Again, these are the kinds of things you can do, and you start coming up with all these other neat little things. Sometimes I'll be bored and I'll sit around, what else can I automate? And this is kind of fun.
Have you delved in? Because I think too, now you can tie this stuff into shortcuts, right?
You know, I have not played with shortcuts very well. I might be one of the few Mac people who don't get it. I don't get shortcuts.
We'll have to do an episode for you on that.
Okay.
Because I've gotten a lot more into it. I've started to write little apps for things, even for listeners who will call or write in with a problem. I've written a couple shortcuts that I've sent, then shared with people and said, oh, here, you can do it with a shortcut. Here's an example.
All right, I need to play around with that
It's pretty neat. The one tip I'll give you, real quick tip, is once you dive into it, think about recipes. So what Shortcuts really has is a list of ingredients, and ingredients vary depending upon sort of what the app is and what you're working with. So an ingredient might be, you know, open a file or visit a website or, you know, whatever that little unit of thing is. So you take ingredients and then you build a recipe. And if you think about it that way, I think that's the easiest way to think about it. So it's, you're building a step-by-step recipe to do some sort of action or perform some sort of thing. Of course, it gets more complicated in that because you do have, you know, logic functions and variables and all these things you could set up. But at a real basic level, what you're trying to do is just take individual pieces and link them together into a step-by-step recipe to do something.
Can you tie shortcuts to HomeKit?
I think you can. Yeah. Okay, that's what I was asking. If you had done that, I think there's some things so you could, like, you know, have your motion sensors like trigger something on your Mac potentially.
See, now I'm seeing more things that you can do with that, because now you can send yourself an email or whatever. Not you get notifications, but you can do a little bit more sophistication with that. So that's kind of interesting. I'll probably have to take a look at that. I think you might be able to do some sort of that stuff,
but I'm not sure. Don't quote me on it, but I think you might be able to. Okay. I know you can do like terminal SSH commands from shortcuts for sure. So I'm sure there's some creative ways to tie this stuff, you know, even further all together. Yeah, absolutely. And the other thing I love about setting up some of the automation is with Siri shortcuts and stuff, you can really customize the names of the scenes, like what you say to Siri to trigger scenes, and you can get really creative and really natural about it. So, like, I think I have one that's just, you know, hey, S lady, good night. And when she hears that, basically every light that I have shut down, you know, it's like shut down the house. And if I had door locks, she could lock the doors, make sure the garage doors shut, you know, all those sorts of things.
Yeah.
Yeah. And just one command. So you're heading to bed, you just say, you know, good night, S lady. And away it goes. So I've had a lot of fun with this stuff. Sounds like you're enjoying it too. It's kind of the fun thing.
And you can make it useful too. There's a lot of things I've done on the podcast in the house that my wife just kind of like, okay, whatever. But automation she has never complained about because she enjoys it. She uses it too. I mean, she likes when she comes in at night with her, you know, hands full of something, and she opens the door and the light automatically turns on. So these are things that make our lives easier, and it's worth it.
Yeah, and it's getting less complicated to do. I mean, this stuff used to be really, really hard to set up. You know, you basically needed a degree. And with HomeKit and with Siri, Apple really has kind of achieved that thing where anybody can really do this. So, you know, I'm hoping with this episode and us sort of diving into this a little bit, people who have maybe been on the fence or been just thinking about dabbling with this and trying it, you know, I would say there's a lot of simple devices you can get. You know, some of the plug-in like wall sensors that are just, you know, you plug it in and then you plug a lamp into the plug. You can take a dumb lamp and turn it into potentially a smart lamp and just play around with it. Yeah. You know, those or get one bulb or a couple bulbs or something like that and play around with it.
That's how we recommend everyone get started. Just go buy two wall plugs and automate that. That's it. Nothing more. Because it's set it up at sunset every day, and it automatically adjusts for sunset, you know, to turn on or whatever. So start there and build up. Because if you look at my automation, you're going to say, oh, man, that's going to take forever to do. But I didn't build it all in one day.
Right. Yeah, me neither.
Actually, this is a great segue into what I would love to see updated in HomeKit.
Yeah.
One, I would like to be able to save the configuration. And I'm trying to see, I don't see any way to save it, because what if, for whatever reason, you just totally mess things up? It'd be great to be able to go back to a known state.
Oh, man.
The other thing is I'd like to be able to duplicate an automation. And the reason being is I have something, let's say, that comes on 15 minutes before sunset. Every once in a while, a device doesn't trip. And then I can go into the automation manually, say, rerun this automation. I would love to be able to just to have another automation happen a minute later, or even within the automation itself, say, repeat this 1 minute later.
Chain them and repeat them. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, because one of the things I did with my Insteon was I did exactly that, and it was very easy to duplicate, because you could just say duplicate this. And then you have the exact same thing, and you just say, run this one a minute later. And then you have a little bit of redundancy that you would never have to worry about something not happening. So there's no way to do that other than going in and recreating the exact same automation. And if you got like 13 lights you want to turn on, you have to go and do that all 13 times. And sometimes you say, I want this light at 80% and I want this light to be an amber. So you have to actually go in. It's a pain. So I would like to be able to just to do a duplicate or, as I said, just say rerun this a minute later. The other thing is I'd like to name them, because now a lot of them are just named with the time. So it says 5:15. So you have to remember at 5:15, this is what I want it done. And it'd be great to say outside lights on, and it would just be easier to deal with it when you're going back into
kind
your
of have
automation.
Labels on them, yeah.
Yeah, have labels on it. So hopefully Apple will add that functionality to it.
I'm with you on the, like, a way to save and re-import the configuration, especially like the registration. If you've ever had to like reset your entire system, because, you know, with HomeKit, the way most devices work, right, is you have the little QR code that you point, and hopefully you have it actually on the device if you're lucky enough. But like, for example, the wall box for my iDevices switches. iDevice has this really cool thing. It has the code on this little like slide out tray, right? That's underneath the light. But I have one box that's really tight and you cannot get that thing to slide out. Like it's like jammed shut in there. And same thing with the LifeX bulbs that I have. Unfortunately, the QR code for that is on the instruction booklet that came in the box. It's not actually on the light bulb. So if I have to like reset one of those or figure it out, I have to like go back and try and figure out which box did this bulb come from. And I usually have to do it like by the serial number. It's a giant pain. It is
right.
a giant
so,
pain to reset that stuff up.
Totally agree. And what I ended up doing was I created a note and I have the device, and it's like you said, there's a QR code, but there's also, I believe, it's a 8-digit
number. Yeah,
number. So I've written down the 8-digit number. For
I did the same thing.
It'd be great if Apple would let you just export that stuff.
Yeah,
and then you would have the device with the QR code and the number. I know for security they don't like doing it, but just, you know, if I'm the one who owns it and I'm willing to do it, let me export my devices.
Yep.
And
I put in one password. Just put in one password as a one password note. It'll be totally secure.
Yeah.
Or as a secure note in the Notes app.
Yes, exactly. So there's things that I, it's funny. I've sent them an email before and I said, look, I do the show on home theater, home automation, been doing it for 15 years, have a lot of experience with automation. Here's some, I think, ideas that you might like. I never even got a reply back from them. It's
Doing
their thing.
You never will. But they read that stuff. They definitely read that stuff. I've talked to people, and they do listen to feedback. So it's always good to give feedback. I always encourage people, do it. You know, you are not likely going to hear back from them, but it does get read. You know, they're one of the few companies I think that do really pay attention to their users. You know, and they're going to rank those things and they're going to rate them based on, you know, need and how many people are asking for it and all that stuff, right? They have to kind of do that. But they definitely, from everything that I've ever been told, I've talked to people, you know, who are inside Apple, and they say they do. So I have no reason not to believe them.
All right. Well, I'll send them another email.
Definitely doesn't hurt.
Really, the latest cool feature, though, I don't know if you've had a chance to explore this, but on your phone or your iPad. I've not seen this in the on the Mac version. There's a button where you can push and you can it's the intercom. You can record a message and then it sends it off to your HomePods, which I think is kind of cool, because now I want to get one for every room in the house. So you can kind of say, like, if my wife's in our bedroom, I can just send a message to the bedroom saying, okay, I'm done doing whatever.
Yep.
Just whatever. You can send messages through the intercom system.
Well, and they'll go to any iPad, iPhone, AirPods, your CarPlay. Like, the message goes everywhere. I have it. Unfortunately, I have to get my family to actually update their operating systems, because they never do it.
Yeah.
So, so I can send intercom messages to myself in my office HomePod, and that's it.
Yeah.
So I guess last thing I wanted to ask you about, you know, because I think it does take this to the other level. I mentioned, you know, having a HomePod is a nice addition to the whole HomeKit setup. But obviously, until recently, HomePods were expensive, man. But now we've got HomePod Mini. I ordered one. It's not coming till next week, unfortunately. I didn't get right on the ball day one. Do you have a HomePod Mini yet, or did you order one?
I ordered it too. It should be coming. Mine says December, so I might even be further.
Did you order a black one?
I think I did. Yes.
Yeah. I looked at the black one because I have a white HomePod in my office. And I'm like, oh, I'll get a black one this time. And it was going to be a week longer to get the black one. So
okay.
I rolled back to the white one because it was already a couple weeks out. I can't wait to get that thing. It's getting great reviews. But I think it's going to be, I mean, if you're doing the home automation, like a big key part of it, right, is being able to control things with your voice. And I guess most of us probably carry our iPhones around, but something about the HomePod experience is just, again, it makes me nerd out. It makes me feel, again, like Star Trek or Jetsons or something like that. It's like just the room is talking to me, and it's just like you just speak what you want and things happen. It's like magic.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And from an audio point of view, the main HomePod I have, the big one, has really good audio. I'm really impressed with how good it sounds. And then I'm hoping this Mini sounds pretty good, too. Now, I have a lot of speakers in this house, that I've built myself. I don't know that it'll compare with those. But for what it's doing, I think it'll be just fine. And it's small enough to where you could put it somewhere pretty inconspicuous in a room. And you can have music, or the main thing is telling Siri to do something is a big deal as well.
Yep, very cool. Well, this was a lot of fun. I'm glad you reached out to me and said, hey, we should do something on this. This was a great idea, and you know, especially now that there's so many options, and whatever level, whatever price point you want to get in on this at, I feel like there's an option for you. And I think we did a pretty good job of sort of covering them. You know, you can start with a really cheap, inexpensive device, even a non-HomeKit one, add something like a cheap Raspberry Pi and install the software if you're willing to get down and dirty, all the way up to, you know, some pretty nice finished commercial products. So I think if you've been holding off on sort of getting into HomeKit in this world, but you've been intrigued by it, I think now is a good time to start diving in, for sure.
And yeah, and if you have any questions, just send me an email. You can reach me at ara@htguys.com, and this is the kind of stuff I do all the time. And even if you are not doing the Mac version, if you're doing the Echo or even Google, I can help out with there as well.
Yeah, I was going to say, direct people to your show. I'll let you tell them all about it. So yeah, thanks again, Ara, for coming on. Let everybody know about the podcast, and you mentioned some other cool stuff that you've gotten involved in recently. So yeah, plug away.
So it's funny, one of the first podcasts I ever listened to was Adam's, the MacCast, and then my partner on the show, Braden Russell, and I, we were talking about doing our own, so we did one on home theater and audio and HDTVs and that kind of thing back in the early 2000s. Yeah. We used to work for Sony Pictures, so that's where we got our experience with that. But we were also software developers, and we just have a technical background. And then when we moved into home automation, the HT, instead of being home theater, is more like home technology. I said that earlier in the show. But and it's something that we like doing and we have a passion about, and we've been doing it almost as long as Adam has. I think you predated us by a few months.
Yeah, and you're one of the OG podcasters with the rest of us.
Yeah, we are, definitely. And then I got into speaker building as an offshoot of doing the podcast, and I built some speakers. I think they turned out pretty darn good. They sound phenomenal. And if you're interested in any of that kind of stuff, we talk about it. You can find some of my videos on YouTube. Just look for The HT Guys. And then also on Instagram, I'm OC Reclaimed Treasures, because I work with reclaimed wood. And the last set of speakers I built has wood that's 100 or 150 years old. It came out of a barn. And I was just telling Adam that I believe the trees were standing at the time of the American Revolution. So when you look at these speakers, you think about what the wood has seen. And I know that's not a real thing, but it just kind of makes it interesting to know that this wood has been around that long, either in tree form or actually, you know, prop milled wood form. And it's a lot of fun. And if you follow me on Instagram, I also make cutting boards, and I am a bourbon and whiskey aficionado, and so I usually have some pictures of some of the bourbons, usually propped up on one of my cutting boards.
Oh, I'm gonna have to get some of that info from you at some point too, and maybe even once this whole COVID thing's over. I don't know if you have. I mean, that's becoming like local stuff, right? Do you get local? Like distilleries around popping up?
We have them down here, a few. Distilleries, but pretty much wherever they're from, all over the country. And so I've been collecting them. And Adam, for sure, when this is done, you're more than welcome to come up. And I think I found out Ken Ray's in local now as well. So maybe the two of you guys can come over and we'll drink some bourbon.
I think we can maybe make that happen. Well, again, thanks again. I appreciate your time. Thank you for reaching out on the topic. It was great having you on again.
My pleasure. I really enjoyed it.
So there you go. Ara Derderian from htguys.com. Make sure you check out his podcast and all the stuff he's doing over on Instagram with his woodworking and speaker design stuff. Great having him on again. Always love to have Ara on the show. Wealth of information. Like, he knows all about this home automation, home theater stuff. Just a super smart guy, and glad to have him in our MacCast community. Hope you enjoyed this episode. I certainly had fun recording it for you. As always, if you have comments, you have questions, you want to know more about this stuff, we are here for you. Send me your emails, your audio comments to MacCast@gmail.com. But that is going to do it for this episode. Before I leave you, I do want to take a quick moment and thank my show sponsor, Smile, makers of Text Expander, PDF Pen, also Text Expander for iPhone and iPad, along with PDF Pen for iOS. You can get more information and details on all of their great software by visiting smilesoftware.com/podcast. Bandwidth for the MacCast is provided by CacheFly. You can find them at cachefly.com. And all advertising on the MacCast is handled by Backbeat Media. You will find them at backbeatmedia.com. As always, if you have a comment, a question, something you'd like to hear covered on a future episode of the MacCast, you can send your emails and audio comments to maccast@gmail.com. You're also welcome to call in on the listener hotline and leave a voicemail. That phone number, 281-622-4269, 281-MAC-I-AM-9. If you need show notes, links to anything that we talked about on this or any other episode of the MacCast, you'll find those on the website. That's at maccast.com. And if you'd like to follow me on social media, you can find me on Twitter, twitter.com/MacCast. You can check out the MacCast Facebook page over at facebook.com/TheMacCast, or follow me on Instagram. I am MacCast over there. But that is going to do it for now. Until next time, I will talk to you all again real soon.